Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Ox Talk for the week of Tuesday the 16th of July. My name is Ross and I am compiling this week's edition. This week's news items were collected from the local Oxford papers, selected and read by Alison Soskis and Marianne Moxon. Sunrise for the upcoming week will be between 5 a.m. to 6 a.m, with sunset being around 9 p.m. The copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here are some instructions on how to listen to Ox Talk using your Alexa device, and at the end of this Ox Talk edition, you will hear how to access Ox Talk online.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue will only respond to automatic fire alarms if they are at a high-risk building and if a fire is confirmed from October the 10th. This change is intended to cut down on false alarms and ensure firefighting resources are available for genuine emergencies. High-risk buildings are those that specifically house vulnerable people, provide sleeping accommodation for people, or represent a critical community asset. The service has recommended businesses take several measures to minimize false alarms, including updating fire safety risk assessments, logging and analyzing false alarms to identify patterns, and installing modern upgraded alarm systems. By reducing false alarms, overall safety will be increased by ensuring alarms are taken seriously.
Blenheim Palace has hosted Abingdon and Whitney College's end-of-year award ceremony, celebrating the achievements of its students during the academic year. At the beginning of July, every year, parents, governors, friends and staff gather for the Student of the Year Awards. Each of the college's 11 faculties select winners for the Outstanding Performance Award and Inspirational Student Award from more than 12,000 students. This year, the Student of the Year was Kaylee Lamin, a higher education student on the BA Honours Early Childhood Studies course run in partnership with Oxford Brookes University. Her tutor, Rob, said, during her first 2 years of her degree, Kaylee was a conscientious and productive student, asking questions, engaging in research, working collaboratively, and acting upon feedback to develop her knowledge and understanding. And incredibly, nothing has changed in this respect. Kaylee has demonstrated the resilience, drive, and organisation necessary to not only keep on track with her studies, but extraordinarily, she also improved on her previous academic performance. She's an inspiration to all who encounter her, including classmates and teachers, her work colleagues and the children in her care, who she continues to inspire in all manner of ways, promoting fun learning and sport, supporting their development every day. Another winner was Nina Skaliknova, who scooped the Inspirational Student Award for the Access to Learning faculty. Her tutor said, Nina joined the college as a Year 10 student, and by Year 11, she not only flourished but also became a pivotal influence on her peers, consistently attending all sessions and inspiring others to stay focused and engaged in learning. Nina's relentless hard work and positive attitude have made her a joy to teach. She epitomises the values of Gateway, showcasing remarkable confidence, resilience and determination. The award ceremony also featured performances by the college's performing arts students. Abingdon and Whitney College is an award-winning further education college located at four main sites across Oxfordshire, in Abingdon, Whitney, Bicester and at Common Lees Farm.
Karen Martin, University of Oxford professor and founding chief executive of the National Cybersecurity Centre, has warned that part of the NHS's IT system are out of date and at risk of further cyber attacks. More than 6,000 appointments and procedures were postponed at major London hospitals because of a cyber attack in June. Professor Martin said he was horrified but not completely surprised by the ransomware attack. He told the BBC ransomware attacks on healthcare are a major global problem. In parts of the NHS estates, it's quite clear that some of the IT is out of date. Professor Martin said outdated IT systems identifying vulnerable points and basic security practices were critical issues facing the NHS.
A Bicester primary school is taking part in an outdoor play programme which supports schools with improving the quality of children's outdoor play. The Glory Farm Primary School is involved with the OPAL, Outdoor Play and Learning, primary programme, which supports schools with strategically and sustainably improving the quality of their play opportunities. The OPAL website states, "Research shows that children's mental and physical health is getting worse and that great play can make it better." During 7 years at primary school, children spend 1.4 years at play. We want every school to produce a plan to show how they will ensure that every child has at least 1 hour's outstanding outdoor play every school day. Pupils at the Bicester School enjoyed a range of play opportunities in the sun, giving them the chance to develop key skills as part of their play. Head teacher Jane McLaughlin said, "In September 2023, we made the decision to better value the time that children spend in unstructured play at break and lunchtime. Our parent fundraising group, Frogs, has also played a large part in raising money to support additional resources." The OPAL website also states, "Our goal is that regardless of gender, race, ability or location, every child should have access to outstanding play opportunities every school day of their lives." Mrs. McLaughlin said, "This vision meets our strong belief in recognising and valuing diversity, equity and inclusion. Some of the activities we have available are gymnastics area, large mud kitchen, scooters, trim trail, Lego and Duplo, dressing up for role play, a construction area where children design all sorts of wonderful creations, old car tyres, tunnels, chill spaces, creative areas, small world. As the head teacher, I value seeing all children engaged in a wide variety of activities and making new friends from all age groups." Assistant head teacher Miss Charlotte Smith said, "With unstructured time accounting for 20% of a child's school day, that's 1.4 years of their primary school education, we wanted to make sure it was as engaging and enjoyable as possible for all."
Sir Keir Starmer's first cabinet is the most diverse on record in terms of education background, analysis has shown. The majority of the Prime Minister's top team, 23 cabinet ministers, attended comprehensive schools, according to research by social mobility charity, the Sutton Trust. The Prime Minister attended a grammar school, which was a state selective grammar when he started, and his place remained state-funded throughout his secondary education. Only one member of the new Labour cabinet went to an independent school. Of the 25 ministers in the Labour cabinet, 40% studied at Oxford or Cambridge universities. Sir Keir continues the tradition of nearly every UK Prime Minister since the Second World War, having studied Oxford University after he attended for a postgraduate degree. Staff at Oxford University Hospitals Trust have received a letter thanking them for their work to mark the NHS's 76th birthday. Professor Sir Jonathan Montgomery, Chair of OUH, and Professor Meghana Pandit, Chief Executive Officer at OUH, wrote to staff on July 5th, 76 years to the day since the NHS was founded. In their letter, they said, "Every single one of us who work for the NHS plays our part in saving lives, bringing new life into the world, and providing excellent and compassionate care. Thank you for providing the best possible care for our patients and for your compassionate excellence in spite of all the challenges facing us, both professionally and personally. The NHS birthday is an opportunity to look forward to another year as one team, one OUH, and we know that we will again be inspired by the reports of your kindness to each other and to our patients, by the exceptional research that leads to transformation of treatments, and for our patients' lives and the day-to-day excellence of the care you provide."
Castle Quay is bringing back the popular school uniform pop-up shop later this month. This well-loved initiative is set to return on Saturday, July the 27th, to encourage parents to recycle usable school uniforms rather than discard them. Organisers are calling on families throughout Oxfordshire to support this sustainable community project. Unwanted but still wearable school uniform can be dropped into Castle Quay's branded donation containers located at the customer service desk near Lock 29. The centre accepts donations Monday to Saturday between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. as well as Sunday from 10 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. up until Friday, July the 26th. The more items that are donated, the greater the variety of items available in the pop-up shop for families to benefit from. The pop-up shop operates on a principle of take what you need, give what you can, as it seeks to provide families with much-needed resources. On Saturday, the 27th of July, the pop-up shop will be open to the public from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. It will be located in the unit opposite the Nothing But Footprints store. No payment is needed to browse or select items from the shop.
There is a completely different world outside the M25, separating lefty liberal London from the rest of the UK, according to Nigel Farage. Some Conservative councillors in Oxfordshire have long made similar comparisons in their own home county. They say the left-wing state of Oxford is an anomaly encased within the rural town and hinterland that lies beyond. But now, for the first time since 1777, there is no Conservative MP in the county. The political map of rural Oxfordshire has turned from almost entirely blue to orange and red. Liberal Democrats won seats in four constituencies outside the Oxford Ring Road. Oxfordshire's blue Conservative donut is no more.
Thames Water has warned it will run out of money by the end of next May and could go bankrupt. Britain's biggest water firm, which is under a debt pile of more than £15 billion, said on Tuesday that it had £1.8 billion of cash reserves at the end of June, a fall from £2.4 billion 3 months previously. The firm said it is still looking for new funds needed to maintain and update its infrastructure after investors pulled the plug on £500 million of emergency cash earlier this year. Chief Executive Chris Weston said Thames Water had taken informal soundings which have shown there is interest in the market. He added that the company will be looking at a broad church of potential investors, which could include existing shareholders. If it ultimately fails to attract fresh funding, Thames Water's fraying finances could present Sir Keir Starmer's newly elected Labour government with a significant industrial crisis. A blueprint codenamed Project Timber was being drawn up in Whitehall in the spring, according to reports which could see the company effectively nationalised. Under the plans, the company would be placed in a form of special administration in the scenario that its parent company fails. Mr. Weston added, "It is not in the interests of customers or investors for the company to fall into government hands." Communities Minister Jim McMahon said on Tuesday morning, "We recognise that over the last 14 years, frankly, the water industry hasn't been regulated anywhere near as firmly as it should have been, and we haven't seen the investment to deal with the sewage scandal. The days of putting shareholder interest above the national interest frankly can't carry on, and so we do need to look at that, and Thames do need to look at their own house and get it in order. Mr McMahon said there is no programme of nationalisation for the water industry when asked what the plan is if the company collapses. He did, however, say there is no provision in law for a water company to stop providing water, adding, "We need to be very clear, there is always a contingency in place." Thames Water's financial update will be followed on Thursday by a draft verdict from Ofwat on water companies' five-year spending plans and bill increases to 2030. That will kick off 6 months of negotiations with Ofwat ahead of its final decision in December. Thames Water, which has 16 million customers in London and the Thames Valley region, put forward plans in April that would see spending rise to £19.8 billion to update its infrastructure and reduce sewage spills. However, that would also involve increasing customer bills by 44%, a figure which has prompted backlash from consumer groups. Meanwhile, the process of securing new cash is not expected to conclude until after Ofwat's final decision on Thames's business plan in December. Any increase in bills would be greeted with anger after Thames Water and other water companies' disastrous recent environmental records sparked a nationwide scandal over pollution. Thames Water said pollution incidents increased to 350, up on 331 last year, which it blamed on a rainier than expected year. The number of serious pollutions decreased by 18%, Thames Water said. When questioned on the issue on Tuesday, Mr Weston said, "You might not like the answer, but rain has a big impact on spills." It comes amid reports that Sir Keir has been briefed that the poor state of Thames Water's physical infrastructure presents a critical risk to the country. Fears about the company include its management of sites that provide drinking water and sewage treatment for London and the Thames Valley. Thames Water said it spent £2 billion on maintaining and updating its infrastructure last year. The Prime Minister's official spokesman told reporters on Monday, "The government has said in its manifesto that we will put failing water companies into special measures and they will have no choice but to clean up their act. We talked about giving regulators the power to block payment of bonuses to executives who pollute our waterways and impose automatic and severe fines on them for wrongdoing."
South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Councils are raising the bar on recycling by urging residents to rethink their waste management. Residents of these areas have been recognised as some of the most effective recyclers in England over the past decade. In a fresh wave of environmental action, the councils are not only celebrating past successes, but also looking towards the future by advocating for a shift to holistic waste management. Part of the big plan involves encouraging people to reduce, reuse, repair, refill, and rehome items, as opposed to throwing them away. Ensuring simple and effective curbside collections, maintaining clean public spaces, simplifying the process of reporting waste-related issues and harnessing local knowledge to enhance street cleaning are among the key actions outlined. The councils also plan to support community litter pickups and make available information on local events like repair cafes.
A group of young swimmers from a Wantage club have been invited to compete at a national event this summer. Wantage White Horses Swimming Club will be represented by four swimmers at the Swim England National Summer Meet at Ponds Ford, Sheffield, from July the 29th to August the 3rd. The group consists of Ben Cooper, who will compete in three breaststroke events, Taylor Curtis, who will compete in two breaststroke events, and Gavina Semonella, an S14 para swimmer, who will compete in the 100-metre breaststroke. Minnie Wilkinson, the youngest of the group at 12, will compete in the 200-metre individual medley. Club head coach Melanie Cumberland said, "This is a fantastic achievement this year for all swimmers and the club. It's great to see four Wantage White Horse Swimming Club swimmers competing at these championships this year. We're all very proud of them." The group recently undertook long course practice at Bath University in preparation for the contest. Volunteer-run Wantage Whitehorses Swimming Club was set up in 1978 and provides training for swimmers ranging from beginners to those competing at county and regional competitions. The majority of the volunteers are parents of current or previous club members. The club also offers swim trials through the year and seeks business sponsorship.
Oxford has been named as one of the best cities in the UK for university students. A new study conducted by accommodation provider Now Students has ranked every UK city with a university campus. The research has been based on the average price of a beer, average standard taxi fare, safety index score, monthly cost of groceries, and an academic ranking of the institution. Oxford ranks sixth in the top 10 list, having the second best academic institution in the country and a respectable safety score. However, the city was let down by its relatively high food, taxi, and beer costs, which decreased its overall score in the study.
Earth Trust volunteers joined thousands from across the country in the recent Restore Nature Now march through the streets of London. Staff, volunteers, trustees and members from the charity, based in Little Wittenham on the south bank of the River Thames, took part in a range of animal masks with homemade placards. The group also called on supporters to vote for nature in the general election, for our health, our economy and our future. More than 60,000 people, including more than 350 charities and action groups, marched through the capital to Parliament, calling for political parties to restore the natural environment and tackle the climate crisis. Dame Emma Thompson told politicians to listen up as she led thousands of people alongside businessman Dale Vince and naturalists Chris Backham and Steve Backshall. As the march went down Whitehall, boos could be heard as the crowd passed Downing Street, with people shouting disapproval and gesturing.
Kingham is the most stylish place to live in Oxfordshire, according to a new survey. The village topped a list of the 60 most stylish places combined by Furniture Box, which polled 5,000 people. The second place was taken by Minster Lovell, with Uffington, Burford and Shipton-under-Wychwood ranking third, fourth and fifth, respectively. The locations were ranked based on the appeal of the architecture, the scenery, how Instagrammable their best features are, and their popularity as a filming location. Nationwide, the village came 20th, with the top spot claimed by Grassington in North Yorkshire, where the TV drama All Creatures Great and Small is filmed. A spokesperson from Furniture Box said, "Kingham is the most stylish place to live in Oxford." What is interesting is how influential Instagram has become in boosting tourism in many of our top 60, particularly around Oxfordshire.
Oxford was transformed into a wonderland for Alice's Day, a citywide annual celebration organised by the Story Museum. Dedicated to the curiouser and curiouser world of Alice's adventures in Wonderland, it's an annual celebration of a story beloved around the world and synonymous with the city of Oxford. Set against the backdrop of Oxford's world-famous cityscape, the annual Alice's Day offered a variety of activities, including interactive storytelling, talks and trails for the event held on Saturday, July the 6th. Christchurch, Oxford's Covered Market, Oxford Botanic Garden, Bodleian Libraries and Oxford University's Museum of Natural History all took part with a series of events and talks. Visitors tried their hand at croquet at Christchurch, enjoyed a curious creatures trail around the covered market, and even met a dodo at the Natural History Museum. There was also the famous street theatre on Broad Street, with visitors encountering the Story Museum's giant Alice puppet and an appearance from the Jabberwock. The 3-metre-high Jabberwock roamed the city out and about with its musical wrangler. Crafted by the acclaimed theatre makers and specialists in large-scale puppetry and magic, Rag and Bone, the Jabberwock, was on the move in central Oxford, blinking its eyes and snapping its jaws, raising up to its full height of 3 metres. The Story Museum was buzzing with visitors taking advantage of the half-price entry offer, and where there was free Wonderland-themed face painting in the courtyard and other activities. In addition to the Alice Day festivities, the Story Museum was also proud to participate in Sobel House's Ox Trail, Oxfordshire's first ever sculpture trail, which also launched on the 6th of July. The Ox Trail will see more than 130 sculptures taking over the city this summer. The Story Museum's extra mini herd of painted oxen can be found on Pembroke Street in its temporary museum next to the museum's long-established telephone box Mousam. The Story Museum is also delighted that an Alice-themed ox painted by Oxfordshire-based artist Caroline Ritson features as part of the main sculpture trail. The Story Museum's head of programme and participation, Amina Enayat, said, "We are proud that Alice's Day has become a firm fixture in Oxford's annual cultural calendar, with both local people and visitors from around the world coming to celebrate it. With citywide events and happenings, it's a brilliant way to explore Oxford and get to know what inspired Lewis Carroll's timeless tale." She added, "We want to extend our heartfelt thanks to everyone who came along and to our fantastic partner venues who have worked so hard to make Alice's Day a success."
A scenic artist who lives near Bicester continues to secure production contracts for film and TV at an impressive age of 102. Tony Strong, who grew up in Maidenhead and now lives near Bicester, where he has resided since 1980, was the creator of artwork seen in many films, including the tarot cards in the 1973 film Live and Let Die. He has worked his entire life as a scenic artist for film, TV, and theatre, and has collaborated with many film directors, including Stanley Kubrick, Ken Russell, David Lynch, and Sidney Lumet. Tony's extensive list of film credits features many popular films, including The Shining and Gulliver's Travels. Also on his list is Murder on the Orient Express, which featured a 400-foot-wide backdrop created by Tony. In the past 18 months, Tony's artwork has secured over 10 contracts, some still in production, with three of them being for Netflix. One of the productions was A Good Girl's Guide to Murder, which was released on the BBC July 1st. Speaking about his father's career, his son, Graham Strong, said, "He was interested in art from the beginning. His uncle was an artist who also worked in the film industry. He grew up in a creative family. His mother was a singer, and his father was a cinematographer in the 1920s. In 1972, Tony went full-time freelance, starting his own company. Speaking about his father's skill, Graham said, "Any good scenic artist has to be adaptable and have a huge variety of techniques."
Private gardens in Oxfordshire will be open to visitors this summer for a charity fundraiser. The National Garden Scheme provides access to more than 3,500 private gardens across the country. This initiative, which has been running for 40 years, has already raised £19 million for Macmillan Cancer Support. The funds have helped to pay for more than 150 Macmillan nurses and other staff. The money raised since 1984 has also funded care units in Bristol and Chesterfield. Most gardens welcome children under 16 for free, while some offer activities for families along with tea and cake. The charity said, "Why not inspire your little adventurers to learn about nature and support Macmillan this summer with a visit to a National Garden Scheme garden?"
Police dogs have been putting their senses to the test recently at Blenheim Palace to complete security checks ahead of the European Political Community meeting next week. Thames Valley Police posted a video of the dogs, Yuri and Gary, in action on Facebook. The video showed the dogs running around the grounds in Blenheim Palace sniffing for suspicious items. The dogs are specially trained to sniff out suspicious items to ensure there are no safety concerns on the day. In another statement, Thames Valley Police said for the next few days there will be an increased and visible police presence. This will include armed officers, search officers, and dogs, police horses, along with other security measures you cannot see. Please speak to our officers if you have any concerns. The event will be hosted by the UK government and will bring together numerous leaders from across Europe.
An Oxfordshire couple will be walking 800 kilometres in Spain to fundraise for disadvantaged children in India. The couple from Steeple Aston, Emily and Greg Elphick, will walk the Camino del Santiago at the end of August. The former police officers aim to gather donations for the Hope Foundation. Mrs. Elphick said, "We heard about the Hope Foundation whilst watching Sue Perkins travel across India in the BBC programme The Ganges. We were inspired to support a child who lives on the streets. Over the last few years, we have seen the difference hope makes to children's lives." She was eager to take on a challenge to mark the start of her life after a 30-year police career. The couple has kick-started their efforts with a Just Giving page. Hope was founded 25 years ago by Irish humanitarian Maureen Forrest and helped 13 young vulnerable women off the streets in Kolkata. The organisation now has 57 programmes and has positively impacted 3 million individuals. Juliet Whittaker, head of fundraising at Hope UK, said, "We are very grateful to Emily and Greg for taking on this epic challenge to raise funds and awareness for Hope. Please do support them if you can by donating to their fundraiser, as the funds raised will help make a positive difference to the lives of many disadvantaged street-connected children in Kolkata, India."
A women's peace choir performed at three Oxford locations recently. The Amar Yasidi Women's Choir performed to full audiences at the Weston Bodleian Library, St. Michael's Summertown, and Somerville College. The choir comprised Yasidi women who live in Kanki refugee camp in Kurdistan, supported by the Amar Foundation. It is made up of eight singers who have been living in this tented camp since 2014, following the ISIS attacks on the Yazidis on Mount Sinjar. The Iraq government plans to close the camps in the autumn, leaving the group and 30,000 others provided with health care by Amar, potentially dislodged. This puts them in a difficult situation, as returning to their home, Shingal, is too risky. Amar and others are lobbying to keep the camps open for the dispersed 195,000 Yazidis across Kurdistan. There is a plan to bring the choir back to the UK next year.
A 17-year-old from Bicester is set to perform alongside international dancers in an English Youth Ballet, EYB, performance. Dancer Lucy Mitchell was selected in March to join the 90-member cast of EYB's production of Sleeping Beauty. She attends Blessed George Napier School in Banbury and Victoria Hill School of Ballet, which offers classes throughout Oxfordshire. She and her fellow performers were selected through auditions on stage at the Wickham Swam in March, which featured more than 150 young dancers. They took part in a full ballet class on the stage, and the successful auditionees found out that they had been selected on the day of the audition. They are now in rehearsals, which will last 60 hours over 10 days for the upcoming performance at the Wickham Swan Theatre from August the 9th to August the 10th. The production will comprise three performances and promises to offer traditional aspects while incorporating new elements. It will include six international principal dancers and will serve as a platform to showcase the talents of 90 young performers. EYB director Janet Lewis said, "English Youth Ballet's aim is to provide performance experience to aspiring young dancers in beautiful venues close to where they live. The young dancers get to experience what life is like in a professional ballet company. They learn about developing their artistic and performance skills, as well as improving their technique. I'm always amazed at how quickly the young dancers progress and how positive they are when presented with new challenges." EYB principal Anne Wall will be starring as Aurora in the production. She said, "Being part of EYB is an amazing experience for any young dancer. I feel privileged to be a principal dancer with the company. I enjoy teaching and coaching all the young dancers, and I see some of the most talented young dancers in the country. I feel honoured to be a role model to the dancers and help give them an insight into the world of professional ballet. Dancing with EYB is an experience that will stay with the young dancers forever. Tickets for English Youth Ballet's performance of Sleeping Beauty can be bought by calling 0343 310 0060 or by visiting the theatre's website.
An Oxford City Centre newsagent shop headed by a married couple has won a national award. Hyten and Kanari Patel have been running Honeys of the High in High Street since 2013 and saw off competition from across the UK and Ireland. The couple earned the title of Best Customer Service at the 2024 Fed Awards, leaving 45-year-old Kanari feeling proud. "This recognition means so much to us," she said. "Hyten and I would like to thank our team at Honeys. Without their hard work and dedication, none of this would be possible. And our family and friends for their unwavering support and encouragement. And of course, our loyal and kind customers. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your continuous patronage and trust. Without you, Honeys would not be here today." The judges said, "Customer service is an integral part at Honeys of the High."
Fresh plans have been lodged to build new houses and a care home at a contentious site in delightful LTN, where many proposals have previously been refused. Applicant Kildara is throwing its hat into the ring as a potential developer for the land at Bayswater Farm in Sandhills and would like to construct 76 new homes along with a care home and associated green space. It comes as plans to build 121 homes, which amassed hundreds of objections, were refused for the area by Oxford City Council in May after being submitted to both South Oxfordshire District Council and Oxford City Council. South Oxfordshire District Council saw the application in April, but councillors in the city also gave consideration to the proposals at a planning meeting on May the 21st, as two small bits of land lie within the Oxford border. At the time, Labour councillor Alex Hollingworth said of the proposed development site, "Sandhills is a delightfully designed LTN. Obviously, this would make it much less of an LTN. I'm just curious how many people who live in Sandhills don't realise it's one of the hated LTNs." LTNs, low-traffic neighbourhoods, were introduced in Oxford in 2022 with the aim of making streets safer, but have since proved controversial and been blamed for increasing congestion. Independent Oxford Alliance councillor Ian Yateman said at the time he thought it was misdirection to label areas designed with no through traffic as being the same as closing historic through roads. Objections were raised to the application on the basis it lacks surrounding active travel options due to the only route out being a main road. Now the developer insists the parcel it wishes to build on is its own distinct housing site, so not subject to the same complex environmental constraints and infrastructure needs as the main parcel. An applicant planning paper adds 50% of the homes would be affordable, and there is a substantial need for new housing within South Oxfordshire District and Oxford City. The site comprises two fields divided by a hedgerow, which are loosely bound by existing residential development in Sandhills to the south and west, and deciduous woodland to the north and east. Beyond the woodland lies open countryside, which is designated Green Belt. Land at Sandhills near Barton is part of a strategic allocation in the South Oxfordshire Local Plan 2035, with a total 110-hectare area expected to deliver around 1,100 new homes up to 2034. Objector Michael March, who lives near the site, had said in response to the now-refused application, "I can see no justification for concreting over Bayswater Farm field now when it has resisted repeated developers' attempts to do so over the past 65 years or so, and the reasons that have been given for refusing permission for development are as valid today as they ever were, if not more so." The applicant insists the development will create access to existing greenbelt land through delivery of new footpaths across the site, linking to the existing network.
A blue plaque has been unveiled in honour of a pioneering female doctor who worked in Oxford. Oxfordshire Blue Plaques Board revealed the tribute to Dr. Isabel Little at 2 Holywell Street on July 6th. Dr. Little was one of Oxford's first female GPs, who, despite facing strong opposition, significantly advanced the establishment of family planning. She trained as a doctor in Edinburgh, graduating in 1912, and joined a female-run medical practice in Oxford in 1919. By 1928, she had opened her own practice at 2 Holywell Street, where she remained until 1961. Dr. Little was influential in an initiative discussing the establishment of an Oxford birth control clinic in 1926. As part of the Council of Oxford Family Welfare Association, Dr. Little was one of two female doctors to volunteer at the clinic on two evenings a week. In the early years, the doctors faced intense hostility and condemnation, often being accused of doing the devil's work. Dr. Little also had an interest in psychiatry and served on the management committee of the Warnerford and Park Hospitals from 1951, where her personal dedication and understanding eased a complex period of hospital mergers.
An event in the Cotswolds is allowing people to meet the Red Arrows team and see them in action. Royal International Air Tattoo is an annual air show which is held at RAF Fairford and attended by around 150,000 visitors. The major event will see aircraft descending on the Cotswolds from all over the world from Friday, July 19th to Sunday, July 21st. There will be several air displays, including shows from the world-renowned Red Arrows, but there will also be action on the ground. There will be hundreds of aircraft to view, ranging from huge tankers down to the cutting edge of aviation in electric aircraft. In addition to the static display, there's the show's Technozone and Inspire stage, where young people can listen to industry leaders about their experiences in aviation. Run by the Royal International Air Tattoo's parent charity, the Royal Air Force Charitable Trust, it aims to encourage young people to consider careers in aerospace, and this year youngsters can meet the Red Arrows. RAFCT's Hannah Langford said, "We're really excited to offer an action-packed Inspire stage schedule across all 3 days of the show this year. We have some names joining us, including crowd favourites, the Red Arrows, and Tom Fletcher from McFly, talking about his passion for aviation and the Royal International Air Tattoo." With a handful of aircraft still yet to be announced, the show has experienced record demand, with tickets selling out for both Friday and Saturday, with only limited tickets remaining for Sunday.
Oxford University Hospitals will live stream surgeries to train medical and nursing staff. Funded by Octopus, an Oxford-based charity dedicated to advancing colorectal disease research, the screen showing the live streams will be located in the operating theatre's surgical suite of the Churchill Hospital. The project will aim to bridge the gap between theoretical learning and practical application. Professor Sir Neil Mortensen, chair at Octopus, said, "We are thrilled to support Oxford University Hospitals with this state-of-the-art technology. By live streaming surgeries, we can provide clinicians with unparalleled access to expert surgical practices, enhancing their learning and ultimately improving patient outcomes in the field of colorectal surgery. Live streams will feature varied colorectal surgical procedures with senior surgeons providing real-time commentary, explaining each step of the procedure and answering questions from the observing clinicians. The ability to observe live surgeries and engage with experienced surgeons in real time is a game changer for medical education and improved patient care."
An international theme park has announced £300 million plans for its first UK site near Bicester. Last year, Puy de Fou, a historical themed attraction, declared its interest in wanting a 300 to 400 acre site within a 40-mile radius of Oxford for a new theme park. Now theme park bosses are proposing for the new attraction to be built in the Charwell district north of Bicester and near the M40. A public consultation website has been launched and consultation events are planned for Bicester and Oxford later this month. The first consultation will take place at Wayland Hall on North Street in Bicester on Thursday, July the 18th, between noon and 7 p.m. A second consultation will be held at Wesley Memorial Church on New Inn Hall Street in Oxford between noon and 6 p.m. on Friday, July the 19th. The company has previously said it intends to open two new destinations in the world before 2030, with the UK remaining a preferred location. The proposed new site in the UK would celebrate British history and culture. Olivier Strobel, chief executive of Puy de Fou, said, "We are not an attraction like you've ever experienced before. We do not have any rides or roller coasters. There are no neon flashing lights. Instead, we create an authentic, natural and historical environment set within beautiful gardens which become the setting for world-class shows and immersive cultural and historical experiences for the whole family to enjoy. With Britain's rich history and with so many British people already visiting us in France and Spain, we've been looking for a site in the country for many years and we have now identified the perfect location near Bicester in Oxfordshire. A new Puy de Fou destination in Oxfordshire would represent a £300 million investment and could employ 700 people, plus create as many as 2,000 new jobs at hotels, suppliers and other local businesses from its first year of opening. After 10 years, that investment is expected to be doubled and the number of jobs multiplied by three. We are still at the early stages of preparing our proposals, but look forward to meeting local residents and businesses as part of our public consultation."
Labour has promised to reform the planning process in their early promises post-election, following a fall in the number of planning applications submitted in Oxford in the last decade. The number of planning applications submitted in the city has fallen by nearly a quarter over the last decade, although there has been a slight increase in the last year. Department for Levelling Up Housing and Communities figures show Oxford Council decided on 1,136 planning applications in the year to March, up from 1,062 the year before. Of these, 80% were granted. Across England, councils decided 333,000 planning applications, 12% down on the previous year, and the lowest recorded figure in the last decade. Sir Keir Starmer has said his first action as Prime Minister will be to reform the planning system. Labour said it will build 1.5 million new homes over the next Parliament by bulldozing restrictive planning rules, encouraging councils to build on brownfield sites, identifying lower quality areas in the Green Belt for development, termed Grey Belt.
The Labour MP for Oxford East has been appointed Minister for Women and Equalities, as well as a Minister of State for Development, after the party's comfortable general election victory. Annalisa Dodds is the new Minister of State in the Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office, and so will hold both positions. The Minister of State for Development is responsible for overseeing aid given to other countries and international development. Ms Dodds will serve as the junior minister for women and equalities under Bridget Phillipson MP, who will take on the cabinet role. The news comes after it was announced the Oxford MP of 7 years had also been replaced at Labour Party chair by Ellie Reeves. Ms Reeves was previously deputy national campaign coordinator for Labour, deputising for Pat McFadden in overseeing the party's election campaigning. The Prime Minister appointed his top team on Friday, making only minor changes to the shadow cabinet that existed before the election. During a cabinet meeting, Ms Dodds sat in front of a place card reading Minister of State for Development. However, this post had not yet been officially announced. Ms Dodds managed to secure 19,541 votes for the general election, giving the Labour Party a majority of 14,465. The Oxford East MP served as the party chair for the last 3 years. Kemi Badenoch previously held the role of Minister for Women and Equalities for the Conservative Party. It's a position that has sparked debate and controversy in recent years, with Ms. Badenoch recently being criticised by former Doctor Who star David Tennant, who said he wished her for her to shut up due to her views on transgender people. Ms. Dodds has also been criticised for different reasons, with some saying the Labour Party is unable to provide a clear definition of woman. The Labour Party insists it has been clear on the issue and that sex and gender are different. In a statement issued on Sunday morning, the MP for Oxford East said it's been an honour to serve as party chair for the last 3 years, getting the Labour Party back in the service of working people and meeting so many dedicated Labour members right across the county. Many congratulations to Ellie Reeves, who I know will do a brilliant job.
Oxfordshire's top athletes were celebrated at awards events last week. The county's sporting stars gathered for GLL's Sport Foundation Awards, marking a year of sporting achievements. The events took place on consecutive evenings at two locations, the Beacon Theatre in Wantage and Carterton Leisure Centre. On Wednesday, June 26th, more than 100 people came together to recognise sporting excellence across South Oxfordshire and the Vale of White Horse. In total, 86 sportspeople from the two regions, representing sports ranging from trampolining to wheelchair motocross, will receive $54,000 in funding. Medals and certificates were presented by Gary Starkey, GLL's head of service, and Kate Mulray, community sport manager. All athletes also left with a goodie bag of different sporting items. Meanwhile, at Carterton Leisure Centre on Thursday, June 27th, the venue was transformed into a Hollywood-style auditorium, complete with stage, lighting, a professional singer, and canapes. The event celebrated 51 West Oxfordshire athletes set to receive this year's GLL's Sport Foundation funding, totaling £30,000. This also covers a variety of sports, including triathlon, tag rugby, and trampolining, as well as less common sports such as bowls and synchronized swimming. Medals and certificates were presented by Julian Sayers, Deputy Lieutenant for Oxfordshire, while Joss Lentall, CEO of Active Oxfordshire, and Mr. Starkey were also among the guests. The GLL Sport Foundation is managed by Charitable Social Enterprise GLL and is now in its 16th year. The scheme continues to grow on a national level with 28,146 athlete awards, inclusive of 117 different sports.
An award-winning author is set to visit a secondary school to talk to students about her inspiration and encourage them to read. On July the 10th, Jo Cotterill, who has written more than 40 books for children and young people, will pay a visit to Wallingford School and meet with students in years 8 and 10. Her career has featured multiple awards and 3 nominations for the Carnegie Medal. Besides writing, she's been an actor, an English teacher, and a firework technician. She co-writes the Starlight Stables Gang series with Esme Higgs, one of the biggest influencers in the equestrian world. She also writes the superhero part book, part comic series, Electric Girl, with illustrator Kathy Brett. Ms. Cotterill will aim to inspire the students to try creative writing and emphasise the joy of reading. The occasion is part of a literacy project funded by the Merchant Taylors Foundation and Authors Aloud UK, which involves taking authors into schools in Southwark, Aylesbury, Wallingford and Londonderry. The hope is that by meeting the authors, young people will be encouraged to increase their reading for pleasure and develop their creative writing skills.
A new tour in Oxford will look at the city through the lens of iconic film and TV shows, including Endeavour and Inspector Morse. The new Oxford on-screen tour will explore Oxford's role as a backdrop to TV and film, identifying locations featured in productions as diverse as Harry Potter, Saltburn, Wonka, James Bond, and Mamma Mia 2, plus the ITV dramas Inspector Morse, Lewis, and Endeavour. Commenting on the new tour, Experience Oxfordshire CEO Hayley Beer-Gamage said, "We have long recognised screen tourism as a driver for choosing a leisure tourism destination. But this desire to be where it happened has grown exponentially in the Instagram age. The Expedia Group have stated that more than half of international travelers revealed to them that TV shows and films inspire their travel. Oxford on-screen public tours will last 2 hours and operate twice weekly on Thursdays and Sundays at 11:30 a.m., starting on July 25th. The tour can also be booked for private and group parties. All tours are limited to a maximum of 20 people per group to provide the most positive experience. The team of friendly guides already offer specialist tours, following in the footsteps of authors and academics, including C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. Currently, the most popular tour amongst visitors is the Oxford University and City Tour, which, in addition to sharing historical facts, fables, and gossips, guides can provide lots of detail about Oxford University colleges. During the summer months and until the end of October, Oxford official walking tours will also be offering an extended program of activity.
Craig Short has revealed the level of detail that goes into Oxford United's recruitment during the transfer window. The U's first team coach used his links with Louis Sibley, who he worked with at Derby County, to provide a character reference for United's head of recruitment, Ed Waldron. With Short having been a player or coach for more than 35 years, he's established strong links within the game. He said, "Because I've been in the game so long, I seem to have a contact at any club. Ed's often asked me in the summer, 'Can you get such a character reference on so-and-so?' It's not so much the ability of these players we're trying to sign, because you see them on videos and there's so much data. Ed's incredible and he's very good at his job. He's very thorough. And if he wants me to make a phone call, I'll make a phone call for character references, because that's important for what you bring into the club. You want characters, but you want the right sort of characters, and that's part of Ed's job, but also the coaches. If we know people, we have to do those background checks." On the signing of Sibley, which was completed last week, Short said, "I haven't worked with him for a few years now, but he came on the scene at 15 and was with the under-23s at 15. He did very well, and it didn't take him long to break into the first team. Louis always makes things happen. He's one of them street footballers who goes past people and creates things. He's got a bit of an edge to him, and we had to have a word with him about his discipline when he was younger because he just wanted to win so much. He's got a lovely left foot, drives well with the ball, and goes past people, which is exciting for fans. I've always enjoyed watching him play, and when you look at his record, he's played 60 to 70 games in the Championship. Even though he's 22, he's got experience on his side and played at a big club and understands what it's like to play with the pressure of that big club. He'll be a really good addition for us, especially with a manager that wants to play attacking football. Sibbers will be a huge advantage to us. Louis's only going to get better and better. I think his frustrating thing was that he got played out of position a couple of times at Derby, but they had to do that because of personnel. If we get him as a number 8, driving forward with the ball, then he gets you up the pitch and gets goals and assists. He's very committed."
Individuals in the most deprived areas are nearly twice as likely to suffer from certain heart conditions compared to those in wealthier areas, according to a new study involving the University of Oxford. Researchers analysed electronic health records of 22 million individuals. The research was conducted by a consortium of experts from University of Oxford's Nuffield Department of Women's and Reproductive Health, KU Leuven, and the University of Glasgow and University of Leicester. The analysis also found there has been a 19% decrease in new heart-related disease diagnoses between 2000 and 2019, including substantial reductions in heart attacks and strokes, with cases down by approximately 30%. However, diagnoses of other heart conditions, such as irregular heartbeats, valve problems, and blood clots, have increased. Due to these differing trends, the overall incidence of cardiovascular disease across 10 conditions studied has remained relatively stable since 2007-2008. A majority of the improvements in heart health have been seen in individuals over 60. Younger age groups have not experienced the same positive trends. The conclusion drawn from the results suggests that future efforts to combat heart disease must consider a broader range of conditions.
Two Thames Valley Air Ambulance paramedics will be joining an all-female team of air ambulance staff taking part in the Great North Run. Critical care paramedics Emma Gray and Hannah Hurst are part of the 20-strong group from 13 air ambulance charities across the UK. The team are tackling the challenge to enhance their mental and physical well-being, but also to inspire other women to pursue roles within pre-hospital emergency medicine. The Great North Run is on September the 8th, which happens to be during Air Ambulance Week. A second all-female team will also be participating in the New Forest Half Marathon on the same day. These challenging runs come against the backdrop of a male-dominated FEM industry, where men significantly outnumber women. Ms. Gray, who contributed to the team's assembly, said, "Far fewer women than men apply for roles within our sector. I strongly believe that role models can help us realise what's possible, and I hope our team will inspire women to believe in themselves. Whether it's crossing the finishing line of a challenging run or applying for a job you didn't think was open to you, with training, hard work and self-belief, you might be surprised at what you can achieve."
A celebration has been held to recognise 7 community-led research collaborations formed through a university programme. 7 community groups have participated with institutions like University of Oxford and Oxford Brookes University to develop projects focusing on local needs and interests as part of Science Together programme. These collaborations range from initiatives like ARCT, assessing community well-being interventions, to Good Food Oxfordshire, designing solutions for healthier diets, and Inspire Sounds and MES Creations, exploring the impact of youth music and mentoring, and delivering graffiti workshops to gauge attitudes towards community, antisocial behaviour, well-being, and perceptions around graffiti. Elsewhere, Oxford Lindy Hoppers investigated physical and mental well-being benefits of dance, and Parasol Project and Slade Nursery School supported social resilience and communication skills development in their communities. Professor Alexander Betts, Local and Global Engagement Officer at the University of Oxford, said, "It was an inspiring day, bringing together an amazing group of community partners and researchers, all working together to develop positive social impact. Science Together exemplifies the university's ambitions to support community-led research and to create opportunities for young people in our local community." Music and food brought visitors to Jericho for the latest Lazy Saturday gathering. The community events have been staged for several years in Mount Place and often attract people from across the city. A bright sunny summer day, a site beside the Oxford Canal, Little Ox beer on tap, German sausages, and 5 local bands attracted 180 people to the 12th event of its kind. The bands ranged from jazz on piano and violin from Nick Gill and Caroline Watson, 1950s rock and roll from 55 Jive, to Tom Rogers playing acoustic guitar. They got visitors dancing, and a bucket was passed round for contributions at the end. 2 workers from the community, Carol and Gay, manned a tombola stall in aid of raising funds for the parish pantry, which each week distributes surplus food to all. They brought in £250 from an afternoon's work. John Mayer, the organizer of this and previous 11 Lazy Saturdays, said, "We're always lucky with the weather, and the formula seems to work." 3 Barbies in pink cars will join Whitney Carnival Parade this Saturday to highlight an annual breast cancer fundraiser. The real-life Barbies will highlight the yearly Whitney in Pink Day, this year taking place September 28th. Carnival visitors are encouraged to contribute to the cause by guessing the number of pink sweets in a jar at a stall organized by Whitney Against Breast Cancer. A total of £300,000 has been raised by Whitney in Pink Day over its 24-year history, with funds going towards research by Abingdon-based charity Against Breast Cancer. The charity focuses on improvements in detection and treatment of the disease in order to increase survival rates. Archaeologists have completed work to restore the head and neck profile of the Uffington White Horse. The project was undertaken by archaeologists from the National Trust and Oxford Archaeology to return Britain's oldest chalk figure to its original state. Last year, studies revealed that the 3,000-year-old symbol had diminished in size due to the gradual encroachment of grass and topsoil movement. The head and neck area was most significantly affected, having reduced to less than half its typical width. To restore the 11-meter-long figure, the turf that had crept into its outlines was removed and the chalk from the top layer was redistributed. National Trust archaeologist Adrian Cox said the Uffington White Horse is set in a dramatic landscape, shaped by nature and by people through time. It is a hugely important chalk figure, partly because it is the oldest scientifically dated example in Britain, dating back to the late Bronze Age. It is also an intriguing figure, as we don't know for certain its original purpose. It could have been a way of marking territory or as a tribal symbol. What we do know is through the efforts of generations of local people, the horse has been cared for, allowing it to survive for thousands of years to become an iconic figure of this landscape. During the work to restore the white horse's profile, soil samples from the lowest layers of the figure have been taken to see if they can accurately date its creation. English Heritage Senior Properties Curator Wynne Scott added, "As a scheduled monument, the Uffington White Horse is under the guardianship of English Heritage, and we are delighted that work is being done to better understand this iconic place while it's returned to its former shape and size."
And that is all the news for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, please feel free to contact us by phoning 07496 062 280. That is 07496 062 280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message, or you can send us an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and past editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can listen to these editions directly or download them online. If you need any help or have any further queries, please feel free to contact us. That is all for now. We hope you have a wonderful week, and thank you for listening.